Gator Nation, welcome in to another episode of the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. We have got a jam-packed show for you. It is finally game week. We are going to be talking about the Utah Utes, all the storylines going into it, the depth chart being released. Is there some gamesmanship going on between the coaching staffs on both sides? We will get into it. And then everybody's favorite topic, if not the most, maybe the most controversial topic, uniform schedule released by the football program. But before we get into all of that tonight, you can please subscribe to us at the In All Kinds of Weather YouTube channel here. Please leave us a like down below, subscribe, leave a comment for feedback. It helps us grow and get out there more so we can have great content to you. Also, make sure to follow us on all of our social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Well, guys, we got a game week. And, you know, before we get into it as well, I didn't really tease it, but we've got a special guest. He's waiting in the lobby. We're going to be talking about what he's been working on. You all know him as Dustin Smith. He's been putting out some fire graphics for the recruiting handle this past summer. And he is going to unveil something that the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast team has been working on, specifically him. He's been doing it all himself. But this is something that probably you will not find at any other Gator podcast out there. So this is something very proprietary to In All Kinds of Weather. And we will be unveiling it tonight. But first off, Neil, you are up back in your neck of the woods up in New Jersey, been hanging out up at the U.S. Open this week. You've been hanging out with Ben Shelton, Gator great. How's he doing in the U.S. Open right now?
Yeah, he's been blazing trails, setting records, and just making Gator Nation proud all throughout 2023. I didn't actually see the first set of his first round match of the U.S. Open on Monday. I tried to get there in time. My parents don't live that close. I'm staying with them this week, and that's a solid 15 miles west into New Jersey. And then you got to fight your way through Manhattan into Queens. So it took about 2.5 hours. He lost his first set pretty quick. I got there, and I'm just reporting facts here. I'm not claiming any credit for this. I'm just reporting the facts here. I got there. He saw me. He knows who I am. We've met before. We've messaged several times before. He saw me. He gave me a little nod. Give me a little fist pump, flip the switch. From what I saw on my phone in that first set when he lost pretty badly 6-1 to what I saw in person, completely different player. Started bombing serves in there, blasting forehands, just abusing Pedro Cachin, his opponent. Blew him away in 3 consecutive sets after that. So he's the one who turned it all on. You know, all credit to him, not claiming credit for inspiring him or anything, just noting the fact that when he saw me in my Gator gear, different player. And in that, he becomes the first Gator man to win a match at the U.S. Open since 2009. Is Jesse Levine. That's a long time ago. And Ben Shelton's journey has just gotten started. He should be a senior in college right now. Instead, at that age, he has already gotten himself into the top 50 in the world. Now he's going to face the 2020 U.S. Open champ Dominic Thiem in the round of 64. By the time this drops, that match will have already gotten played. But whether he wins or loses that match, he is only going to keep rising. Wow, that really feels like a nice segue into our main.
Nicely done.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a perfect segue into it. But yeah, he's going up. He is going up, 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 up. We call Florida the everything school. And until a few years ago, tennis wasn't really doing its part there. No national championships. They had some nice players here and there, but Gator men's tennis was not really a part of that. Now, a few years later, it is a new sport on the rise. They've gotten their first national champion, and they've got a pro we can all be proud of. So Gator Nation football is the focus this week because it's game week. We waited all offseason for it. While we're not watching Gator football, while we need something else to do, I encourage you all to keep showing Ben Shelton your support as he keeps climbing up the ranks in his sport. He is a Gator. He is a proud Gator. He is a Gainesville native, and he is doing his part to cement that everything school status for the Florida Gators.
Yeah, that's exciting. You know, I love that you're able to do that. And it's cool, the friendship, the relationship that you and Ben have had over the years. And it is cool to cheer for our alumni, our Gator-made athletes, you know, and see them continue on those next steps in professional life and athletics, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, and even tennis. Everybody's a Gator. Once a Gator, always a Gator. That is so cool that you're able to do that. So please make sure you all tune in to the U.S. Open as it goes on. And Neil, his next match is tomorrow.
We don't know the time yet. The times are never really announced until late the night before the first match. We're recording this before that. But at some point on Wednesday, he will be playing Dominic Thiem. You can just Google his name, Ben Shelton, Dominic Thiem, start time. You'll get it then by the time this is out. So I mean, it's an exciting matchup. He is going to be facing, again, like I said a minute ago, a former U.S. Open champion. That's always something cool for, I mean, especially someone so young like Ben Shelton with so much ahead of him. Maybe you will get a little bit of the bright-eyedness, like, wow, I'm facing a former U.S. Open champ out there. But, you know, again, Ben Shelton is one of those guys out there that's doing the Gator Nation proud, and he's someone that I think, you know, we can all get behind. He's a fun guy to watch play. He's a fun person to watch play, just his personality on top of the game he's got. And, you know, if you watch Ben Shelton play, you'll find someone that you can root for a long time.
Well, that's awesome. So make sure to tune into that. We wish Ben all the best, and have fun out there, Neil. So next up on our docket tonight, let's get into a controversial topic. We'll brush up on this, but the Florida Gator football program put out the uniform schedule, and Billy Napier has a thing against orange britches. We will not be sporting orange for the first time since the 2000 and I think it's 12 nine season. It's been a long time. It's been over a decade. And somebody pointed out on Twitter that the last time a first year coach got embarrassed in the orange pants, that was University of Alabama in 2005. Urban Meyer closeted them, didn't wear them again until 2009. And then, you know, of course, in 2006, we all know what happens when we wore a lot of blue on the road. We won a national championship. Not saying that's going to happen, but Florida decided to go ahead and ditch those orange pants after the embarrassing Vanderbilt loss. And hope everybody has a closet full of blue shirts this year. Of course, black for Arkansas. But Neil, what are your thoughts on the schedule release for the uniforms and just kind of your takeaways?
I mean, we all know there is a direct and provable cause and effect relationship between the jersey combos and the wins and losses, right? Like, we know that that's been scientifically proven to be a direct link between the two.
You can't wear the Stormtrooper look. It's a guaranteed loss, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And God forbid you were to wear like blue jerseys and orange pants. That's an auto loss. We're kind of used to the days of the team just releasing that week's jersey combo before the game. We're not used to the staff releasing the entire uniform schedule throughout the course of the year. So honestly, I don't love it. I also don't care that much about that. I'd rather see the Gators win. But in terms of the look, I do think that there is a little bit of validity to, you know, look good, play good. So the jerseys are classic, Chris. Like, there's nothing else to say about them than that. They're classic. We've won national championships in them. We've won a lot of big games in them against Georgia and FSU. And again, like, if recruits like it, if the players like it, that's really all that matters.
Well, and the recruits, when they go on a visit, they can wear whatever uniform combination they want and they can experiment. And that's when it kind of gets the fans excited about potential uniform alternates down the road whenever they wear them. But, you know, we talked to Allie Peake about this on one of our last shows. She's a traditionalist. A lot of fans out there, like myself, are traditionalists. This is a very traditional look. I mean, you look most of those home games, we got the blue tops with the white pants. The away games mostly are white tops, blue pants, the lone exception, the Kentucky game on the road where we'll be wearing all white with the orange helmet. And then, of course, we got our all-black game against Arkansas where we're saluting those who serve. But we already knew that ahead of time. The one thing I am excited is we're going to bring back the big game blues this year a little bit more frequently. Yeah. So we're going to be doing
the big game blues. But not against Georgia. That's my real point of contention here. You're going to call them big game blues. What game is bigger than Georgia? They're the back-to-back national champions.
True. I mean, we have worn that, but that combo, that is a classic combo that Florida has worn, though, when they are the home team in Jacksonville, which is the blue top with the white pants. The lone, I think, blue pants, we did it in 2001, 2009. So those are the two that come to recent memory.
Won them both.
That is true. But for the most part, it's blue on white, that traditional look. But I'm excited. The blue out versus Tennessee, the blue out versus Florida State. We tend to play really well when we wear all blue against Florida State. So I'm excited for that. And then on the road against LSU, bringing it back like we did, I think in 2009 was the last time we pulled those out, the big game blues, or 2015 we did as well. But, you know, it's a very blue. It's a very blue uniform release. It is cool to see, though, the graphics, hat tip to Gators Unis on Twitter. He puts out some great graphics kind of showcasing it, put out a uniform schedule with all the combos in one graphic for you to look at. So definitely encourage fans to go check that out. But I'm excited. You know, I mean, just seeing that and kind of being able to plan ahead what you wear for each game is kind of nice.
And I will notice every single game aside from Arkansas, we're wearing orange helmets. So it's not like we can say, well, there's no orange in there. Our colors are orange and blue. Where's the orange? We were wearing orange helmets for 11 of the 12 games.
Yeah. That orange helmet is just a staple, right? Like the Alabama helmet with the number on it, that's a staple. The white helmet for Penn State, the Golden Dome for Notre Dame. That orange helmet with the blue Gator script, that is our staple, and we're going to stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it looks like Florida's going to be staying tried and true with that. So that's all with uniforms. We're going to get in now to talking about the depth chart that just got released. And Neil, for both teams, I think it's safe to say there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on between the two coaching staffs here. Utah put out their depth chart ahead of the game. They both listed Brent Keithy and Cam Rising as starters for this game, both recovering from ACLs. Cam Rising still not even within 8 months of his ACL tear. He has been very quiet with the media. Before, he was basically saying, yes, he's going to be ready by the time the game goes on. And as it's gotten closer, he kind of has just gone into Zero Dark 30 mode on it. Hasn't said anything, isn't giving any pointers to the media. Cam Rising spoke to the media yesterday, didn't give anything more in length to say other than that he feels he's getting ready to go for it. But there definitely is some gamesmanship here. And I think Utah is probably, if I had to guess, and based on what some of their media is saying, it's a 50-50 proposition that he goes and that, it, you know, how healthy really is he 8 months in? And then, of course, Keithy, tight end for Utah, who would be last year was a complete mismatch nightmare for the Gators. I would say probably would be again this year, even though our defense is much improved. What do you make of that kind of dynamic with the coaching staff in Utah and what they're trying to play there?
I mean, it's very difficult. The first thing I'm going to say is I'm not in Salt Lake City. I'm not in the state of Utah. I don't have inside access to the Utah football program. I'm not going to claim to know more than anyone else out there about the health of Cam Rising. What I'm going to say, though, is if the reality, meaning the facts and the truth that the doctors and the orthopedic surgeons and the health professionals out there who are monitoring this situation have to offer is he is not healthy. If that's the case, and he plays and he gets hurt again, that to me is something that should cost Kyle Whittingham his job. That would be unconscionable. That would be, to me, that would be something that's worth firing him for cause. That is so, so recklessly dangerous. Again, if it turns out he is healthy, if the facts, if the reality say he is going to be cleared to play and he goes out there and he's just not fully healthy, okay, different story. But the idea that Utah could be forcing him out there because this is a big game to me is nonsense. And yes, to Utah or Georgia or FSU or Tennessee fans who want to go, well, if the situation were reversed, you'd want Merch to play. No, I wouldn't, because it just doesn't matter that much. ACLs of all injuries are not something you screw around with. There is a study that I found from the New York Knee and Shoulder Clinic. A licensed orthopedic surgeon named William Schell said, if you go out there and you tear your ACL and you come back before you are fully ready to play, you are 7 times more likely to cause catastrophic and permanent damage to your knee. So I don't know what the situation is out there. I'm just saying that Cam Rising is almost certainly not going to be 100%. And I would be really, really cautious about putting him back on the field at all if I were Kyle Whittingham. Now, that said, Brent Keithy is a little bit more of a legitimate question because he tore his ACL in September. Rising's ACL tear was in the Rose Bowl in January in this calendar year. So he's, and Rising is about 7.5 months off of surgery. It's almost been a full year for Keithy. So that's a little bit different. But
which really begs the question, like, how is Rising ready for this game? Because if Keithy is hardly ready now, and we're almost a year removed from that, how is Rising ready to play a game? He tore his ACL off the day after New Year's this year.
And then he have to wait a week or two for the swelling to go down per surgery. So it's about 7.5 months for what should be at minimum a 9-month surgery. Look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon. I'm not an expert here. I am good friends, as I say a lot on this show. I'm good friends with James Houston. He tore his ACL in high school. I remember that recovery process. He wasn't playing football 7.5 months down the road. He was moving, but he was not ready for game action, for contact, for slamming that foot in the ground and pushing off with power off of it. you just don't mess around with that. And again, Rising is a guy that was looking to go to the NFL after last year. He's got that kind of a future. You don't mess around with something like that, especially for a game like this, Chris. I hate to say it doesn't matter, but we saw last year Utah lost this game. It didn't stop them from winning the Pac-12. It didn't even keep them out of the CFP. They could have been in the college football playoff if they hadn't then gone and lost two additional games in the Pac-12 conference. So of all games to risk him for, it's going to be this one. I mean, I think that would be unconscionable if he goes out and plays and he's not fully healthy. But again, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
I mean, look, Kyle Whittingham, Cam Rising, they're competitors. They're coming off. This is a revenge spot for these guys. They're going to want this win after losing at the goal line last year in Gainesville. And now they have a chance in front of their home crowd to pull off a revenge game against the Gators in the first game of the season. They're going to want this. And yes, the Pac-12 has no bearing on this result, but they're competitors. We're all competitors in life. We want to win every time we hit that field. We'll have to see. But
which I get, but there has to be a cost-benefit analysis that's grounded in reality with this, Chris. That's
for sure.
I mean, that's why, like, oh, well, that's an extreme take that he should be fired. Because this is something that's such a serious, long-lasting injury. It's not like he just sprained his knee. An ACL tear should keep you out for 9 months at a minimum. But as you said, we'll have to just wait and see. But I do have a hard time believing that he'll be fully ready, though.
Like, well, regardless if he ready does, to go. If regardless if he does or does not play, I would imagine that Billy Napier and his staff are not playing into the gamesmanship. I'm sure they're preparing for either inevitability, either Cam Rising or the backup taking place for Utah in this game. Now, if you look at Florida's depth chart, the youth movement is taking hold. And we've talked about this now for the better part of almost the last year, is that Billy Napier is not afraid to play freshmen. You look up and down offense, defense, special teams, freshmen are either starting or playing major rotation minutes, snaps for the Gators this year. And if you look, start just off at the receiver position, Eugene Wilson slotting in as the backup behind Ricky Pearsall for both wide receiver and punt returner. We talked about how we would like to see him potentially on punt return over Ricky Pearsall to keep Ricky Pearsall fresh and healthy so he does not get injured on punts. Eugene Wilson's going to play the first game, and I really believe he's going to play a major factor in this game. You know, and then you just kind of continue down the depth chart. You know, a guy like Najee Harris, he's working his way into the two deep for the offensive line. Look at Tony Livingston. Tony Livingston listed as a starter. There's two tight end spots on this roster. You know, I don't know how much validity there is to, you know, I think I look at it, all the five guys listed at the tight end spot between Zanders, Hansen, Odom, Livingston, and Boardingham. All five, I think, probably see the field if they're healthy Thursday night. So I mean, there's some gamesmanship, I think, in that, just kind of not, maybe Billy Napier doesn't even know who he wants to start, and he'll probably take it case by case basis, situation by situation there. We'll have to see. And then you look at the freshman side, or I'm sorry, the defensive side, freshman galore on the defensive line, Cam James, Kelby Collins, Jamari Lyons, redshirt freshman there, getting into the nose tackle rotation. Will Norman also cracking that three deep. And then down on the end of the secondary, Sharif Denson slotting in there at star, Jakeem Jackson back up behind Jason Marshall, Bryce Thornton starting safety. Cannot tell you the last time a freshman started for the Florida Gators at safety. Probably have to go back to Major Wright, maybe in 2007. Does that sound about right?
And it wasn't the first game. How about Jordan Castell?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Jordan Castell, the freshman.
You said Bryce Thornton.
I'm sorry, Jordan Castell. I'm getting my safeties mixed up here. Jordan Castell.
They're both ballers.
Both ballers. Bryce Thornton may actually play. They have him listed as an or with Kamari Wilson at the safety slot. But Jordan Castell getting the nod to start alongside Miguel Mitchell. And I think Kamari Wilson and R.J. Mauton probably play big minutes. But a lot of people thought it was a foregone conclusion that R.J. Mauton start at safety alongside Miguel Mitchell. But that's not the case. Jordan Castell cracked the starting lineup. So, and then I'm really excited to see a guy like Jalen Kimber work his way back into the starting rotation. This is a guy that transferred in from Georgia, was on the 2021 national championship team there, came to Florida last year, was the reason we beat USF with that pick six, was the difference in that game. And he played on a broken hand. And then the rest of the season really was not able to play up to speed because of that. But he's fully healthy now. He's put on some good muscle size and weight. He's not the 285 listed on the depth chart, I don't believe. I think that was a typo on the football staff's part. But from all indications, he has put on some good size and some and added that speed back and seems to be fully healthy to take on that, that corner spot opposite of Jason Marshall and working in with Devin Moore. So just looking at the depth chart, though, you've got to feel pretty good about the future of the program with the youth movement. And there's some depth. There's some depth, especially on the defensive line. The linebacker room has a solid rotation. And even offensive line, we look to be at least 2 to 3 deep there, which is good to start the season out. You hope to work maybe that 3 to 4 deep as the season goes on. But, Neil, you got to feel good about the depth chart.
I do, and there's not really a weakness on it that I look at and go, yeah, I mean, Florida's just going to get abused in at this position. This position is a weakness. This position is going to cost them games. I don't feel that way about pretty much any position. I mean, we've been beating the horse about, well, do we have the QB we want this year with Graham Mertz to death? He's done nothing but impress since we started talking about him this summer. So, I mean, starting there and going all the way down to the safety position on the defense, there's just a lot of different guys. I mean, a QB, there's really only the one. It is Mertz's job. But everywhere else on the depth chart, there's just a bunch of different guys that I think can make noise. You talked about the wide receiver position, the triad of freshmen we brought in, Aiden Mizell, Andy Jean, Trey Wilson. I mean, how are you going to keep those guys off the field? We've heard too many good things about them being explosive, about them being problematic for defenders this offseason. How are you going to keep those guys from playing time? A guy like Marcus Burke, who had a couple of moments here and there last year, now we see him second behind Caleb Douglas at that position. The offensive line, I feel good about too. I mean, Kingsley, we don't know about his health. That was one of Florida's question marks, injury-wise, also him and Chris McClellan. But, I mean, Florida's offensive line looks to be a lot bigger. You want to just talk about pure muscle mass. Micah Mizkuha, we think, is going to be healthy, or at least healthy enough to go out there. Damian George, Alabama transfer, got to like that upgrade on the offensive line. And we say upgrade there. Florida was good last year on the offensive line. We lost Michael Tarquin and Ethan White. Those were two very good offensive linemen that we're replacing with guys who were just bigger. They're just 50 pounds of muscle bigger than those guys. The one surprise I will say is I thought we'd heard a lot of good things this summer about Arliss Boardingham at tight end. We did not see that really translate under the depth chart. We see him at the third string spot on one of the two tight end spots there. Dontez Andrews, Tony Livingston are going to be the starters there. Jonathan Odom and Hayden Hansen are going to be the backups there. Arliss Boardingham is the number three tight end behind Livingston and Jonathan Odom. So that's maybe a little bit surprising, but no real shockers, I don't think, on this depth chart from top to bottom.
Yeah, and on the tight end position, as you kind of were talking about there, I really believe this is going to be a game-by-game, situation-by-situation thing. There might be a game where it just so happens, you know, depending on availability, injuries, or just who's flat out playing better. That's how I think they're going to go with. They're going to ride with the hot hand. Billy Napier has shown that whoever's doing things the right way is going to play. And I think that was the most refreshing thing and the biggest takeaway about this depth chart. We're 2 years in. We've now seen another data point that Billy Napier is willing to play the best player regardless of year, regardless of experience. The best player will play. One more thing. I don't think we really touched on it. I'll just say it right now, but Khalil Jackson getting the crack at the starting wide receiver nod with Caleb Douglas and Ricky Pearsall. Just shout out to him. I mean, you know, obviously a legacy. His grandfather was the first black athlete to garner a scholarship at the University of Florida football program. And then, of course, dad and uncle played for Steve Spurrier in the 1990s. And then to have him now play here for the Gators and earn a scholarship as a walk-on is just a great story. You love seeing things like this. And I really hope he had a touchdown in the spring game. Well, maybe he gets a touchdown on Thursday night against Utah. That would be something really cool to see, a great story to follow, and we'll be seeing that as time goes on. All right. So we have a pretty big announcement here. We've been teasing this for a while, but we're going to bring in Dustin Smith here now. He is going to be sharing with us the college football model that he's been working on over the last couple of months. Dustin has been coming up with a formula to basically predict games in the SEC specifically, but also come up with a power rankings for us to go by of who the best teams are week by week in college football. Dustin, you've been working hard on this all summer. We welcome you back to the In All Kinds of Weather forecast. First off, how you doing? And tell us what you've been working on.
Yeah, guys, doing great. Currently in Orlando, Florida. And I know that you as well, Chris, we got a little bit of a hurricane on our doorstep. Of course, the good news for us personally is this hurricane is not going to hit us, but it's going to impact Florida. And to everybody impacted by the storm, I just want to extend my thoughts and prayers. While we brace for that, I'm excited to talk about what I've been working on. So something that a lot of fans get super interested in is college football power rankings and predicting the outcome of games. Everybody's putting out their season prediction for the wins and losses for Florida, and that's what I've attempted to do. But I've decided to go a step ahead of that. I power ranked every team in FBS, and I'm very excited about what this model is going to do. And there's a lot of things that I want to build into it as far as the season progresses. Right now it's a preseason model, so there's a lot of factors such as recruiting, past accomplishments, returning production, coaching strength and weaknesses. There's a lot of elements that are inputted in right now, but there's no data point more important than the wins and losses and the play in the field. And so I'm excited once we get games going, how this model is going to come alive. And I'm excited to get into predicting the outcome of all 12 regular season games for the Florida football season. Excited, guys.
Well, yeah, no, we're excited too. We've been talking about this privately amongst the three of us now for the better part of probably the last 8 months. Toward the end of last season, we said, how cool would it be if we could be one of the only Gator podcasts in all of Gator Nation that has a weekly power ranking similar to the Pate State power rankings, ESPN FPI, whatever power ranking systems out there, but it be proprietary to In All Kinds of Weather, something that Dustin, you came up with and your formula, and we could showcase this and give it to the fans so they could at least, you know, have a good idea of where the Gators stand amongst the rest of college football and what also it means for their season. So, you know, kind of touch on what, you know, your passion about this, Dustin, why you love it, why you wanted to do it, and what you hope to really accomplish with it.
Well, you have to start somewhere, but my goal is to create a model that we can really even within the game, as the game is happening, we can adjust different elements, different stats, and we can make predictions about the outcome of the game, even within the game. Now, something that Neil brought to my attention, I thought it was a brilliant idea. What if we could look in the game at what would happen if there's a fumble by the opponent, or what would happen if a running back that usually runs for 2 yards per carry, they run for 7 yards per carry? That all changes the advanced stats. And by adjusting those advanced stats in the game, you can make a prediction about the outcome of that game. Football is a game of runs and explosive plays. So I really want to capture what that means. The teams that are having explosive plays are the teams that generally win the game. I know for those of you that remember me in the last year on the podcast, I played quarterback in high school. The most important thing that my head football coach drilled in me is explosive plays and turnovers. Have more explosive plays than the opponent and don't turn over the ball. If you do that, you're going to win. And that's a big part of what I look for in this model. And I'm excited about modeling that and modeling a lot of other things to come as it relates to Gator football.
So you got into kind of a little bit about there, how the model's made, the factors that go into it. Can you give the fans a 35,000 foot view, everything that goes into this model right now? And since some of the tweaks, it's still a work in progress, some of the tweaks that you're currently working on.
Absolutely. So as you can only imagine, there's so many data points that go into producing a model. And I want to make sure that all those data points are not only accurate, but represent what they should represent. What I mean by that, We have stats, but there's a little bit of a secret sauce. Every stat, every item, every data point is weighed in terms of my expected value for that particular data point. That's what makes a model proprietary. It's not just a direct output of advanced stats. On top of that, you can't just take an aggregate of, expected points for a team and use that to predict the score of a football game. You have to adjust those stats based on strength of schedule. So obviously, we haven't played the game yet. So it's really hard to truly evaluate the strength of schedule until games start to be played. And obviously you can kind of do it with your preseason power rating. You can kind of create a strength of schedule, but it's not true unless there's actually wins and losses taking place. I'm excited about what that's going to look like. Also, I'm excited about testing my model for predicting the percentage chance that a team will win. Right now, I'm specifically focused on a power ranking and predicting the scores of Florida football games. Hopefully, this will extend to picking other games, like the top 10 games of the week that we assign. We can get in there and chop it up, talking about Ohio State versus Michigan or Alabama versus LSU. Those are big games, and I'm sure y'all fans want to know what the model is saying. It's going to be exciting, just like the JP poll that Josh Pate does. We want to be right up there and aspire to have that type of excitement and pull.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious you put a ton of work into this. For those who may not know, Dustin graduated from UF in 2017 with a degree in aerospace engineering. He is literally a rocket scientist. Could not think of someone more qualified to oversee this project, and we're super excited to finally see this project come to fruition. We've got a lot more to talk about with this model, plus Florida, Utah. First, though, got to shout out our merch store. In All Kinds Weather has launched new merch that is comfortable, lightweight for those hot summer days, and makes it clear to everyone you come across which team you pull for. From 100% polyester workout tees, soft style cotton tees, sport tech polos, quarter zips, hoodies, beanies, baseball caps, trucker caps, koozies, tumblers, and much more, we've got just the gear you're looking for this football season. Our gear is sold in four colors: orange, blue, black, and white, and it all features that sleek new alligator logo that pays homage to all your favorite moments in Gator history. So don't wait. Get yours today so you can have it as soon as possible. Go to inallkindsofweather.com/merch to get yours today. That is inallkindsofweather.com/merch. And with that said, Chris has got a lot more questions for Dustin, so I'll let you get to it, Chris.
So Dustin, yeah, I mean, you talk about JP poll, FPI, it's model, it's the same idea, but it's something that you came up with on your own based on some of those factors that you believe really go to the heart of what makes a great college football team and what determines wins and losses ultimately. So this will be the big unveil of the inaugural top 25 power ranking by the In All Kinds of Weather, made by Dustin Smith. Weekly, we're going to be putting this out to our fans in more of a kind of a graphic format, and we will be putting this one out in a graphic format that's a little bit more dressed up. But we're going to go old school here. We're going to show you the Excel file, and we're going to run through all of the teams here from we'll start with number one all the way down to 25, and then we'll kind of get into what the model says about the Florida Gators for this upcoming season. So, Dustin, go ahead, lead us off. Where do we got here in the top 10?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. We're truly lifting up the hood right here. I got my Excel spreadsheet up, and as you can see there, we got Ohio State at number one, Georgia at number two, Alabama at three, then Michigan, LSU at five. LSU is a team I'm actually incredibly excited about this season. Not, I'm obviously I don't like LSU, but I think they're gonna have a good season. Gotta
We hope your model's wrong.
I we I hopefully yes, but they have a great quarterback coming back. There's a lot of upside with LSU. Just speaking very unbiasedly in terms of this model, Clemson at six, USC at seven, Texas at eight, FSU at nine, Oregon at 10, Notre Dame at 11, Penn State at 12, Oklahoma at 13, Ole Miss at 14. Great explosive offense there. A team that we're going to be very familiar with by the end of this pod, Utah at 15, Tennessee at 16, North Carolina at 17, Washington at 18, 19 is our very own Florida Gators, Wisconsin at 20, Iowa at 21, A&M, Texas A&M at 22, Oregon State at 23, Baylor at 24, and Iowa State at 25, rounding out the inaugural in all kinds of weather top 25 power ranking.
Well,
So very excited about this, and I hope this pans out, except for LSU. Hope they
in
crap the
Georgia,
bed.
I wouldn't mind
But
Georgia not being
FSU being in the top 10.
Georgia.
Yeah,
I hope this doesn't pan out for our rivals. I hope that, you know, the Florida Gators may match or even exceed your expectations for them here.
Yes. Now, keep in mind one thing incredibly quickly. This model at this point in the season really takes into account recruiting and returning production. Once games are played, that means pretty much nothing. There's obviously a weight and a factor for that, because generally speaking, the more talented teams tend to win more games, but you have to be able to execute on the field. And that's precisely what the model will calculate as the season goes on. How good can this team execute against the average college football team? So, do you
So
guys want to?
this model is essentially saying, like, right now, projecting down the line, the top four teams in the playoff potentially are Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, which, if you look at most places, is a consensus that those teams are all playoff contenders, national championship contenders. So that is in line with your model. Ohio State is a team I don't think a lot of people have seen at number one. I've seen a lot of Georgia, seen some Alabama, even seen some Michigan, but Ohio State is a team that definitely, I don't think, maybe number one, maybe top four, but not number one. So that's kind of interesting to see that there. But that Dustin might have to go to the point of returning production as well as recruiting rankings. Ohio State has been at the top of that for a very, very long time now.
Yeah, and they have a great offense, great coaching staff, and they're formidable. They're gonna have a great year this year. And to your point, Chris, if I had to pick a top four from this model, that the likely matchup in the SEC championship game based on this would be Georgia and Alabama, and this would have Georgia winning, so it'd be Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, and Clemson, rounding out the top. The college football playoff. You might have USC sneak in if Ohio State beats Michigan, but I think with that one loss to Ohio State, Michigan may sneak in at four. We'll see. Do you guys want to get into the game by game predictions?
Let's do it. Let's see it. What do we got here for
Awesome.
the Florida Gators? We saw the Gators now are number 19 in your power ranking. They're going to be taking on the number 15 team in your power ranking, the Utah Utes. Also important to note, I think, what did I see? Five teams there in your power ranking, just like top 25. Five teams that Florida will face throughout this season: Georgia, LSU, Florida State, Tennessee, as well as Utah.
Yes,
There we go.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, by opening this up, you're going to see my official Utah game predictions. So we're going to get
That's
right
fine.
into it.
That's fine. When we get in the verdict, we'll know. Oh,
Absolutely.
all right. So we've okay.
Ooh, okay. Yep.
Okay,
Now, Dustin.
what
Okay.
is the percentage? What is the percentage chance, though, that this happens? Are
Now,
you
this
able to
is.
tell us that, or is this kind of different, a little bit different than that?
So this is a score that is it's an expected score for the game. Without getting into too much of the math behind it, of all the possible football scores, this one should be the most likely outcome. Now, we'll get into in future episodes, and certainly in the graphics, we'll actually have a percentage chance that each team has to win. So obviously, you know, there are scenarios where Florida could potentially win the game. Obviously, there are certainly more scenarios where Utah wins the game, and a lot of that has to do with the home field advantage and the altitude. There is a factor for that that I built, and actually have a formula that takes into account altitude, travel distance, some other factors. Those 11 a.m. away games, they're certainly going to be a factor for that. You know, if you're playing at Missouri at 11 a.m. Eastern, or 11 a.m. local, I should say, that's certainly going to be a factor. Now,
And really quick, Dustin, just before we
go
move
for it.
on, for the fans listening, watching, don't get in your feelings. Dustin doesn't take delight in showing a score that has the Gators losing to Utah by 10 points and covering the spread. You know, people lie, politicians lie, data don't lie. And this is an objective analysis that Dustin has put together that shows on paper, right now, Utah is the better team based on the model and the factors. Now, as the season goes on and as more data is put in, like he said, this could change. And if you then redraw this up in week two, week three, week four, that result could flip and actually reflect what ultimately happens, which, you know, Neil and I may differ in opinion. We've already said that we think Florida has a higher, we believe, over 50% chance to win the Utah game this year. So something to keep in mind just for the viewers out there, the listeners out there. But Dustin, go ahead. Let's run through all these games.
Yeah, Chris, you're right. Now, obviously, during the season, we're going to be predicting the rest of the games. I'm not going to rehash all 12 games, but you'll see how that score updates. So definitely be paying attention in future weeks. So obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, you see that I have Florida losing to Utah 34-24. If you go into the next game, Florida plays McNeese. Cupcake game, 63-7. Florida, after that, Florida plays Charlotte. I have it 48-12.
Oh, I see green.
Yep, lots of green. Then I have, let's see, where did Florida-Tennessee go? I mean,
yo, that would be that's an important one. Ah, see, we got smart data here. Look at that. All right.
That is some live data happening right there. But that's, I mean, doesn't just back totally up one second. That. So what happens though if you go to the Florida Utah game and I were to just tell you, hey, Cam Rising's not gonna play and Brant Keithy's not gonna play. What happens?
Oh yeah, I have a model for that. Florida, I don't have it right here, but I ran that and Florida wins by 2 points. 30-28.
Okay. So there you go. So then maybe a little caveat in case, you know, because we talked about the gamesmanship that Kyle Whittingham is playing. Let's say that they don't play, they're not full strength. Dustin's saying that could flip this result on its head.
Now, if Cam Rising doesn't play, I tried that as well, and that came out Utah winning 31-27, but I'm skeptical of that.
So is that going to wait? Does that assume that that Brandon Rose, the second string, plays, because he's injured worse than Rising is, and it would be Bryson Barnes, the third string. So who do you have being the QB if Cam Rising does not play?
Well, once the way this model works is I'm only looking at the stats of the starting quarterback. Once you bring in a backup, it treats that backup as an average backup player in college football.
I got
so,
you. Okay.
So a way to make it. A way to improve the model would be to actually look at the stats of the backup and power rank that specific player, but that's beyond the scope of where we're at right now.
Okay, so looking at this, Florida starts 1-1. We have them obviously beating Charlotte 2-1, but let's flip. I think we have to put Tennessee in there, and let's see what the result we get there as the away team. Right, so there. Florida, okay.
Hey. Yeah, Florida wins against Tennessee 34-28.
Okay, so Florida off to a 3-1 start with victories over McNeese, Charlotte, and Tennessee.
Now you got to fix that one to make that one say Charlotte.
That's well, he put it up earlier.
Yeah, we did Charlotte.
Yeah, with, okay, my bad.
48-12.
48-12, Charlotte. And then this is a Florida at Kentucky, and I have Florida winning 28-24.
Okay.
And you can even see some of the math happening right here. So this is the difference in the power rankings. Vanderbilt versus Florida, 45-14, Florida. And then for the Florida-South Carolina game at South Carolina, you have Florida winning 31-29, a super close game. There's a lot of factors at play. That's nearly a 50-50 game. I don't think it gets any closer than that.
And real quick, Dustin, before we go any forward, and this just jogged my memory. So Tennessee, you have Florida beating them 34-28. Obviously, Tennessee is higher than Florida in the power ranking, but Florida's playing at home, and it is a night game. So those definitely factor into that six-point upset for Florida in that situation of the power ranking. Because if you were to flip it, Tennessee's the home team, Florida's the away team, that would flip the result then, correct?
Yes, I have a proprietary calculation for home field advantage. And under the circumstances of it being a rivalry game at night in the swamp, more than likely 90,000 fans, Florida is actually adds 8 points to their power ranking by being in that environment. At a neutral site, Florida would be expected to lose by 2 points.
And then lose by four. I think it was like 33-29, something like that, if Tennessee is the home team.
If Tennessee's the home team, then Tennessee would actually have in the same environment, they'd have about, they'd be a seven, or I think they'd actually be an eight as well, because obviously Nealand is massive.
Okay. Gotcha. We wanted to clarify just because that's one of the first upsets we've seen with the model. So, all right. Absolutely. So 6-1 going into the Georgia game. Good start. I think a lot of Gator fans would take that. I think that's something that some of us actually predicted on some of our season preview shows. So now we get to Georgia and let's see what we got there in the cocktail party.
Yep. It's
not as bad as I thought.
Not a blowout.
No, not at all. Now, there is a couple factors that are at play at this. Georgia has an unproven starting quarterback. Certainly, if their starting quarterback continues to improve and does what Stetson Bennett did last year and the year before, then this would change everything. Georgia could end up beating us by 30 points if their quarterback turns out to be a Heisman winner. Of course, I'm talking about Carson Beck. So, but right now, assuming that Georgia's starting quarterback, Carson Beck, plays like the average first-time starting quarterback of his recruiting caliber, this is what the outcome is expected to be.
Okay, so 6-2 rolling into Arkansas.
Now, this is the all-black game, another game that is expected to be a sellout crowd for the University of Florida. Florida would have about a 7 or 8 point home field advantage based on my math. Could certainly be wrong on that. I definitely want to adjust that if necessary. But I have Florida winning 37-24. I'm not sure if I actually read the Georgia score. For those of you listening on the pod, I have Florida losing that game 34-23. So let's go to the Florida LSU game. This one's not going to be pretty. I have LSU winning 38-20. Now moving on to Florida and Missouri, I have Florida winning by 6 on the road. This is another game that I actually expect to be one of those 11 a.m. starts. So that's where you see kind of that difference. And then also, of course, the home field advantage from Missouri, but Florida still comes out on top. Now for the Florida State game, this is another true toss-up. The difference between 6-6 and 8-4 and 9-3 is really a coin flip. And this is where you get it right here. I have Florida beating Florida State simply because of that 8-point home field advantage.
This is cool, Dustin. I mean, you have Florida projected to go 9-3 with this, and that's if the ball bounces their way, if they're able to take advantage of existential factors like home field advantage, the crowd, rivalry, passion. It's really cool how this all came together and all of your hard work. So definitely thank you for that. And excited to see how these numbers change throughout the year as more data is put in and hopefully it becomes more accurate. So it's going to be really cool to see how the game results reflect this. And we're going to track it throughout the year, Dustin. We're obviously going to have you on the show every week to recap this, how the model's changing, unleash that new power ranking, how it changes our win-loss projections for the season. And you know, you think back to last year, Florida was very close to being an 8-4 team. If they don't have uncharacteristic turnovers against a inferior Vanderbilt team, that's 7-4 right there, coming off two big wins against A&M and South Carolina. And then we lost by 7 points to Florida State, where we couldn't tackle the quarterback in the backfield. And, you know, that could have been 8-4. And
Kentucky,
that was,
don't forget that. Could have been 9-3, just like is predicted here.
Absolutely. And certainly there were some toss-up games that Florida won too, Missouri being one, Utah being another, USF being another, which we didn't expect to be a toss-up game, but it was. So, I mean, that's the freakiness of college football. There are some things data cannot account for, but it gives us an idea for expected value. And right now the model says, and this is if the ball bounces Florida's way, Florida goes 9-3. So it's a pretty, I think, conservative estimate, because, I mean, look, Florida, at, you know, maybe they beat Utah on Thursday, but they lose that close game to South Carolina in the middle of the season. And that's where that other loss comes from. Or they don't beat Tennessee at home. You know, there's different things. It could go different ways, but I think this is, like we said, expected value.
And like Dustin said a minute ago, if you were to tweak this and give him the piece of information that says no Brant Keithy, no Cam Rising, the model does have Florida winning this game. So potentially, you're looking at 10-2. Chris, Billy Napier would be revered as a deity in Gainesville if that came to pass in year two.
Most definitely.
Now, real quick, something I want to caution. if you had that, this model actually predicts Florida to win 7.9 games and lose 4.1 games. And how's that calculated? That's calculated by looking at the percentage chance for every outcome. For example, Florida has about a 40% chance to win the Utah game. They have about a 99% chance to win the McNeese game. You take that and you keep adding that down the line. It's looking at about a 7-5, 8-4 season. Because again, there's several games that are incredibly close to 50-50, where the ball bounces one way, a fumble happens this other way, and you could get a completely different outcome.
For
If
sure. And
Graham Mertz gets injured, now Graham Mertz isn't considered to be an incredible quarterback. I think he's pretty good based on what I've seen and what I've heard from camp, but I'm looking specifically at Graham Mertz as a slightly above average starter who started for several years. And the model is outputting his potential based on that stat. If he turns out to be excellent and he doesn't really turn over the ball, then Florida could certainly win 10 games. But if he's a turnover machine and he plays a lot like he did at Wisconsin, then maybe I might have to push that back a little. Maybe we might be going to a 7-5 or 6-6 type look. There's so many variables that have to be taken into account.
Well, this is fun though. I'm stoked. I'm excited, Dustin. Fantastic work. This is an incredible addition to the In All Kinds of Weather. We hope that our fans will love this as it continues to come out. Like I said, we're going to be putting out graphics. We're going to be showing this data as the season goes along and tracking it. So we're going to track from right now to the end of the season and see how far off we were or Dustin was in those predictions in the model. But I'm excited to see where this goes. And now it's time to break down quickly that Utah game. Dustin, we're going to start with you. First off, are you going to stick with this as your score prediction, your prediction for the game, and then give us a percentage chance and a key to the game?
Yeah, guys, the rule that I have for this season is unless the model is showing me something that makes absolutely no sense, I really need to go with the model. I got to stand by it, and I'm going to stand by it. According to the depth chart, it looks like Cam Rising is going to play. Now, that might be highly suspect, but assuming that is the case, I'm going to go with the score. Utah 34, Florida 24. I think it's going to be really close. I think Florida's going to have some big plays early on, but that fourth quarter is going to be the difference where Utah pulls away and wins by 10 points. As far as a percentage chance, I'm going to go ahead and give Florida a 40% chance to win. And then my key to the game is the quarterback situation. If Graham Mertz comes on the field and plays somewhat close to what we saw, I mean, I hate to throw such an example, but the example that's coming to mind based on his tape, if he plays like a Kyle Trask, then we may be in for a surprising season. If he can really execute the play action pass, get the ball to several different receivers, his tight ends, if we can run the ball effectively, if we have a great running game and complement that with no turnovers or minimal turnovers in the passing game, I think that we'll have a great season. And for this football game, I think we have a shot.
Yeah,
Right,
I
Neil.
mean, I think everyone agrees Florida has a shot. I think it just comes down to who makes the plays in the end. First thing I'll say before I give my verdict points is we talked earlier in the show, Chris, about how we did not know the time of Ben Shelton's start for the match against Dominic Thiem. We do now have that. He will be the third match on Louis Armstrong Stadium at the U.S. Open tomorrow or today. On Wednesday, there are two women's matches that go before him. Women play best two out of three. Men play best three out of five. So there are two best two out of three matches that have to go before him. Once those are concluded, he will start against Dominic Thiem. So just clearing that up from earlier. Florida, Utah. Keys to the game. I mean, the health of Utah's two best players feels like a cop-out. So I'm going to go with, is Florida big enough to just bully Utah in the trenches? Because it did seem like Florida was the bigger team last year. Utah's offensive line did kind of push our defensive front around at times. Not all the time, not every play, but felt like a larger percentage of the time than they should have. So can Florida control the lines of scrimmage? Because we've talked all offseason about, you know, Ethan White, Michael Tarquin, very good offensive linemen. We replaced them with guys who are simply 50 pounds of muscle mass bigger. Can the Florida offensive line dominate the trenches? Can the Florida defensive line with Cam Jackson and some of those freshmen and Caleb Banks dominate the Utah offensive line the way we really didn't last year? So that's my key. As for my percent chance, that just varies so greatly depending on what the reality is with Brant Keithy and Cam Rising's health. I'm going to go with both of them play at 50% capacity. That's going to be what I base this off of. If it turns out that they're more healthy than that, or if it turns out that neither of them play at all, this changes. Going on the medium here, the 50% health of Rising and Keithy, I'm going to say Florida has a 67% chance to win. So about a 2 out of 3 proposition. Florida wins the game 2 out of 3 times. It's just that that's just the reality of what happens when Cam Rising doesn't have that running threat that he had a year ago that almost beat us with that long run down the sideline late in that game. We're saving our score predictions for one final go around, Chris, I think. So I'll let you go ahead.
No, you could go ahead. You can go ahead and give it, and then I'll give mine.
Okay, sure. We can do that way too. First preview show of the season. So we're still a little rusty on that end. But score prediction. I have got Florida winning 37-27. I think that wow. Utah will have some moments in the game that scare us. I think they might lead at halftime or late in the game. But again, they don't have a proven quarterback who can beat us with both his legs and his arm the way they did last year. If Rising does play, he is healthy. He will almost certainly not be that running threat he was a year ago. If it's not him, if it is Bryson Barnes, then you're looking at a guy that does have some experience, but he's just not as experienced as Rising. So I think Florida will take control of the game one way or another late in the fourth quarter and run away with it in the final few minutes.
All right. So my keys to the game, third down defense. This is going to be, I believe,
sure.
I believe this is going to be a padlock stack this season. We're going to track it. If Florida can hold third down defense to under 35%, we'll win all those games. 35%. Remember that. First episode of the season, 35%. We hold it under that, we win the game.
Chris, so, I love that. Padlock stats.
We're bringing it back, Dustin. That's awesome. Padlock stack this year, 35% or less defensive third downs get off the field, okay? We've had some real doozies over the last couple of years, some over 50%. We're hoping to get that done. So I know that's a pretty big delta to improve on, but I believe this defense has the ability to do it led under Austin Armstrong. Listen, Florida has been much maligned in the media. There have been some outlandish takes where they have Florida going only 3-9. I think that is absolutely crazy. And I'm just going to let everybody know out there, we have the receipts for when it doesn't happen and when we far exceed those expectations. We'll have a show here where we gloat a little bit about it. But Florida's not going 3-9 this season. They may go 6-6, as Dustin said. The ball could bounce a certain way. We go 6-6. It could happen. But Florida's not going 3-9. And the biggest thing that I'm looking for this season is how this team's culture and focus has shifted from year one to year two. Over 70% of this roster now are Billy Napier transfers and recruits. The vast majority are starting or in the rotation now from the depth chart that was released yesterday. If Florida's defense can improve on that third down conversions and Graham Mertz plays a little bit better, he had that new rebirth. It's a renaissance opportunity for Graham Mertz here at the University of Florida. Florida will win and far exceed their expectations. I wrote the score down just in case Neil, because Neil and I were close a couple times last year. It says 24-20 Florida. I'm going to predict 24-20. Gators get it done on the road. Defensive game. I think Florida, Utah might actually get a little bit off to a fast start in this game. And then it's a defensive slugfest in the second half. And Florida gets the stops necessary. I think this is a game that's very reminiscent of the 2012 Texas A&M game for Will Muschamp, or the 2006 game versus Tennessee for Urban Meyer? Close road game. You got to grind it out, overcome some adversarial moments, but the Gators get it done on the road versus Utah. Take game one, and we'll see how Dustin's model updates from that.
We will see. That's the key for everything. And the last thing I'm going to say before we call this a show, I got to point out that on that depth chart we saw, and I can't believe I forgot this earlier, but better late than never. In fact, it may be better to close the show this way. Chris, a lot of the guys that starred in my culture piece that I worked on while Dustin was working on this model for the better part of 6 months, a lot of guys in the starting lineup, a lot of those guys are getting big time playing this year. Caleb, I mean, we knew Ricky Pearsall, we knew Trevor Etienne. Those are two of the bigger names that were in the piece, but Caleb Douglas earned himself a starting spot. Austin Barber grabbed a starting spot and kind of held on to it. But Miguel Mitchell, he was a real star of that piece, with him going up to an upperclassman and saying, yo, you got to get more effort than that. We know you can do better than that. He's got a starting spot. A lot of guys doing things the right way this offseason for the Florida Gators are being rewarded for it with playing time. Can't wait to see that play out in the field.
Yep. The culture is a-changing at the University of Florida. We cannot wait for the first game in about...
Tomorrow night, Chris. Tomorrow night. When this drops, it'll be tomorrow night.
All right. So by the time you're listening to this, we will be 24 hours away from Gator football kicking off in 2023. From all of us here at the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast, Neil Shulman, Dustin Smith, Chris Yanes, we thank you all for listening, watching. Please make sure to give us a like, a comment down below. Subscribe to the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. Rate the show on podcast platforms wherever you listen, and follow us on all our social media platforms. Thank you so much for listening. Go Gators. And everybody, please stay safe out there as Hurricane approaches the state of Florida.